WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and thank you very much for joining us today. We've got another fabulous edition of On the Commons scheduled for you. And joining us on the Commons today is an old friend, Jan Bergman. Jan is president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, a Florida-based grassroots organization. The website is ccfj.net. I screwed it up on my promo, but Jan, we're very pleased to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, sure. Nice to be with you. It's always fun to be with you on the Commons.
Well, it's all we love having you on the Commons because you always have so much good information to give us, and I know that today is not going to be an exception. Because I know that you guys down in Florida have been super, super busy lately, and you're here to tell us all about it and tell us what happened.
Well, quite a lot has happened. I don't think we can all deal with it within 1 hour because it took us quite a few months to get where we are now. But to make a long story short, we got some pretty good bills passed. We think it's a very good start, which was made, and we are pleased to say that we made some progress, even if we didn't get all we wanted, but who does? And so let's be happy with what we have, and let's start working on what to get next.
Well, can we start from the beginning, because we've got a lot of new listeners out there, Jan, and they're not really... I know that a lot of our listeners know exactly what's been going on because they've been with you and with us, and they've been following everything. But there are a lot of new people from around the country who are just beginning to wake up and just, you know, they're scratching their heads and they're saying, what on earth is going on here? So can we maybe start from the beginning and fill in a few of the gaps and talk about what you guys have done in Florida and how you got to this point, and why you have some good bills passed?
Well, let's say we started in 2000 when quite a few of our now members met in Tallahassee and realized, well, going alone is not getting us very far. So we decided to join together, to join forces, and we founded Cyber Citizens for Justice, which is a Florida-based activist group. We are a grassroots organization. We are growing pretty fast. And we have actually made a lot of progress by adding allies, meaning we formed alliances with other existing groups, quite of them pretty big, like LULAC, like CEO, the union organization, who all feel that reforms for mandated properties are necessary. Now, I say a real good fight has 12 rounds. That's minimum what fighters say. And I consider this last session as round number 3. We had the homeowners task force bill 3 years ago. Then we had another one similar 2 years ago, which ran through the House and the Senate in Tallahassee. And this year we worked on condominium and homeowners association bills, and we got some, we lost some. Well, that's obviously the way it works. We are trying to finally even out the playing field so that homeowners and condo owners associations are again run by homeowners and condo owners and not by industry partisans and people who are interested in our money and not our welfare.
You don't mean there are people like that out there, Jan, do you?
What? quite a lot.
Quite a lot of them.
Where there is money, there are people who are after it.
Follow the money, huh?
Yes, and this is definitely not different. And even if the idea of these associations may have been good for starters, it turned out that quite a few people are abusing the current affairs and are more into making money than into taking care of the welfare of people.
So Florida had, at one point, was had the distinction of being the single, the first, the leader in terms of associations in the country. It was the state with the most associations. And that kind of makes sense because if you look at Florida, a lot of it is, you have a lot of people who are come down, they're retirees or they're getting ready to retire, and they come down and they buy something, usually a condominium, so they can just close it up and leave, or maybe even rent it out while they're back up north and just have this, build up this nest egg and have something ready for them when they're ready to come down. So it's the situation is ripe for a lot of abuses, and there have been a tremendous amount of abuses. And over the years, you guys have done an admirable job of letting the legislators know. They were very well aware that there were abuses. So you had some people who were 150% on your side, namely Julio Rabina, Representative Julio Rabina, but he was not alone. He's the only one that I've had on the show. And you guys, between you and some of these legislators, you've put in a lot of work this year. You had the task force, you had the hearings around the country, right?
It was a lot of traveling, but I think it was definitely worth the while because the media paid attention. You know, it was always hard to get the media to report about the problems. Because some of the people who pay for advertising in the media are the ones who like to have that on low key and not get known, because, you know, it's hard to sell a flawed product, a product which is known to be flawed. So if nobody knows, it's easier to get people into buying these associations, and that is, in my opinion, as well, a reason why there is so much so such a big fight over disclosure. I mean, what is wrong with proper disclosure if the product is fair and good? Nothing.
So
but
yeah,
if you have to hide something, you are definitely against foreclosure, disclosure, wouldn't you be?
Okay, what was it you wanted? I mean, I know that it was separated, it was divided up in terms of the condominiums and the HOAs.
Well, we got quite a lot of the disclosure for the condo associations, which is very good. And we most likely will have as well the necessary enforcement, hopefully by creating the ombudsman's office, which was by the bill created for condominium owners. But so far the homeowners association bill talks about disclosure, but still doesn't have any teeth to it. So it is still, in a way, buyer beware, and if you don't watch out, sorry, tough luck, you sign the dotted line, that's it for you. And that is what we think is necessary, and we have as well here in Florida the community development districts, and there they as well don't disclose to the people what they're getting into in means of monthly dues and so on. And we think people should be aware what they are up against. And without it, you can't sell anything. And these laws need teeth, because you already said it. We have here in Florida many, many retirees, and we have as well quite a lot of Hispanics who are financially not well enough off to pay for high-priced attorneys. So these people are kind of defenseless because they just can't buy justice by paying attorneys. So we need to protect them, and the law needs to protect them. And it's not only good to have the law on paper, you as well need them enforced, because people can't pay for this enforcement.
Is there more discrimination when it comes to sort of enforcing the rules and the covenants and maybe just harassing people? Is it discriminatory, Jan?
In my opinion, yes, it is. Because you will find a lot of these problems, especially in associations where the people are financially not able to pay for an attorney, because, you know, civil litigation costs you nowadays $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. We had a case for a fence which went up to the Florida Supreme Court at a legal fee of $360,000.
For a fence?
For one fence. The fence actually was worth $2,500. But people just don't have that money.
But why would you? Why would anybody spend $360,000+ to defend a $2,000 fence?
Well, it started out with a normal fight, because the association said, okay, you can have the fence. Then they said, no, you can't have the fence. The owner, in the meanwhile, paid for the fence and said, hey, you, I have your permission to build it that way. So now it started in the regular court, and then it went up and up from one appeal to the other. And in the end, the association appealed, and you know, legal fees are going up real fast.
Who won that case, Jan?
The homeowner. Thank you very much.
The homeowner won?
Yes.
Is there nothing in the Florida law that says that the prevailing party will get legal fees?
But see, the problem is, the other association members pay now these $360,000, and they're not talking to that lady anymore because they feel it's all her fault.
Okay, so the board goes after a homeowner who decides to protect his or her property values, and they take it to court, and the association appeals it and appeals it and appeals it and ultimately loses, and then is required to pay the homeowner's legal fees and the
and their own attorney.
Plus their own attorney fees. So then the other homeowners are stuck with a bill for $360,000 plus maybe $600,000.
Well, no, $360,000 is both parties.
It's both parties.
Yes.
Okay.
But $360,000 is a lot of money.
It sure is.
For an association member, that hits you in the pocketbook.
Yeah, and we're told that that homeowners want associations, that whenever anything happens, we're told that this is what the homeowners want. Do you suppose if the homeowners had been asked about appealing this, whether they would have said yes?
I seriously doubt it. And you know, we are making attempts to rein this problem in. There are already limitations in the new Homeowners Association bill, which more or less says that the membership has to be asked if there is a lawsuit being filed, which could end up with more than $100,000 worth of legal fees. But see, here is the problem. They start the lawsuit, and it starts as a normal circuit court lawsuit, you know, estimated cost $20,000-$30,000. So they don't have to ask the membership. But then it goes up and up and up, and suddenly the cost is outrageous. And then it's too late to ask the membership because the lawsuit is in full swing. So we feel that is not necessarily protecting the homeowners.
Last week we had Tom Adolph on.
Yes.
And Tom, as you know, is an attorney in Houston, Texas, and has been active in the legislative arena over there. Well, first of all, one thing he said was he didn't think that the fix was in the legislature, that he felt that the homeowners ought to just take over. But the other thing that that he said, I asked him about a proposed bill that they had in Texas some years ago, where the association would have to put it to a vote of the homeowners if they wanted to foreclose. And of course, that didn't go anywhere. But suppose that in order to go to court, in order to fight these things, whether or not the homeowners should vote on it, because they're going to pay for it. They're going to pay for it. And how many homeowners would vote to foreclose on their neighbors? I mean, should
not
this
very
be,
many.
Should this be put to a vote, do you think?
Well, I think anyway, you know, the membership should have much, much bigger power. Because, but see, on the other hand, the membership is very often not well informed by board members and especially not by the attorneys.
Well, that's by design.
Sure, by design. I mean, and no question about it. But see, that makes it difficult for the member to make a decision.
But if
you know, if they don't get the basic knowledge of what they have to decide about, how do you want to make a decision?
So, but if you know, if you go to foreclose and there's no record of having put it to a vote, if you go to court and there's no record, I mean, the judge, if there's a law that says first and foremost, you have to put it to a vote of the homeowners to see whether or not they want to finance this lawsuit. And if you cannot produce produce a vote or the results of an election or something tangible, then the association loses the case right up front. I mean, it stops right there.
Yeah, but see, now here comes the point. It has to be put to a vote, but you wouldn't even believe how many bogus votes have been shown to people. You know, there was a case down south where they added up the proxies and they added up the people who were present at the annual meeting, and certainly they had 80 votes more than they had membership. You know, I mean, you know.
When you say down south, you're talking about Florida, right?
Yeah, there was, down south Florida for me is, West Palm Beach, actually, it was.
Okay, so what you're saying is that they had more proxies than they had members?
Uh-huh.
Oh, good.
Does it tell you something? Somebody wanted to win desperately.
We're talking to Jan Bergman, president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, a grassroots organization in Florida. His website is, Jan, before I screw it up again,
ccfj.net.
And you can always reach us at www.onthecommons.com as well. We do have a, join us on the web as well. So you had a number of bills, but the bills were divided. There were some bills for condominiums and some bills for the homeowner associations, right?
They were actually, in the beginning, they were divided, yes. And then they were all put together, and we have now two bills which run more or less parallel to each other. Part of it is the same and identical, part of it is not. And it's a little tricky, but you never know who makes the decisions in the background, so it was a little hard to figure out. But actually, the bill which are presented for the signature of the governor, actually, there are two bills, which one is a homeowner's bill, and one is the homeowner's and condo bill. Now, important is that there are new regulations for condominiums, and there are a lot of new regulations for homeowners associations. And some of them are good, some of them are less good, some of them are just lacking the necessary enforcement and the possibility to enforce. But we think it was a good start. We have now a foundation where we can build upon. And we think in former times it was often that they started building with the roof and you know that collapses. So we think we're starting now to work on the foundation. And like I said, a good fight has 12 rounds. We fought 3 rounds. We still have a few to go. And we're already in 2 weeks meeting again to prepare for the next session and decide what we want to do for the next session.
So you had a list of what you wanted, and you got a few of the items you wanted, not everything.
Yes, and I mean, especially the condos, we had quite a long list, which was established after the hearing of the House Select Committee on Condominium Governance under the chairmanship of House Representative Julio Urbina.
And he's a real dynamo, isn't he, Julio?
Yes, he is.
He's great.
But it is really good to have legislators who are really willing to stand up for their constituents and fight for their citizens.
But he sounded so passionate and so sincere about what he was doing. This is what he wanted.
And I think, yes, he very much is. And somebody said, and was kind of funny, he said, you know, a Hispanic and a German together, watch out Tallahassee.
Watch out Tallahassee, here we come.
Yep.
Well, good luck. Somehow Spanish and German works for me very well.
Well, see, the way it works, the industry has huge, huge influence. And I thought it was kind of funny during the hearings for the bills, you know, to hear some of their lobbyists and some of their members and attorneys talking to the committees, and it was kind of funny. Some of them sounded like somebody wants to take their toys away. We kind of had a good laugh at some occasions to listen. And, you know, you felt typically, we were allowed to do for 30 years what we wanted to do. Now suddenly here comes somebody who doesn't like what we're doing and challenging us. How can that happen?
Is that what they were saying, Jan?
Kind of, yes.
You're kidding.
There is very well-known attorney and lobbyist who writes more or less the Florida laws since about 30 years. And I more or less just told him, look, for 30 years you didn't get anything good achieved. Why don't you let somebody else now do the trick?
Oh, boy. And they were saying that this is what the homeowners want. And I keep wanting to go back to that, because every time you talk to anyone in the industry, they say, well, this is what the homeowners want. This is what they signed on to. This is what they agreed to. And if you don't like it, you can move. But when the homeowners try to tell them what they want, all of a sudden it's, yeah, but you agreed to this. You got to move. But we're going to write more, more legislation over here. We're going to take away more and more of your authority and empower the associations.
Well,
but this is what
you
want.
You have to understand, it is not really what the homeowners want.
No, that's right.
It's what the homeowners are forced to take.
That's right.
Because if you go around here in Florida looking for some decent place to stay which doesn't have an association, you're very much out of luck.
Yeah.
I found a lot 60 miles away from me, the only lot I liked, which had no homeowners association, which I just bought.
So you're going to be moving 60 miles?
I move 60 miles in order to get away from a homeowners association. Yes, I do.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to move if you don't like it, because according to the industry, this is what you want, right?
Yeah, right, but see, I can assure you, if you put two new communities next to each other, one with a homeowners association and one without a homeowners association, I would bet you that the one without the homeowners association is sold out much, much faster than the other one. Because from what I hear and what I realize, people buy into association because they have no other choice. There is no other place to move to. You want to buy a new home? Nothing else but the homeowners association. And the thing is, you don't really see what you're signing, because on the day when you're signing your contract at the title companies, in some occasions you get 250 pages of deed restrictions thrown at you, and you're expected to sign up on it, and that's it. You can't read it. You don't even know what you're signing, but they expect you to do so.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I think even if you were able to read it, because, some people do read them, it's not what's actually written, but it's the loopholes that sort of leave you hanging there. And I think this has to be put in the disclosure. There are enough ambiguous, open-ended loopholes in all of the governing documents that they can throw anything through. So basically, Don't bother reading them. You have no rights. And they're going to find a way to take what little you think you have away from you, make it plausible, and then, you know, you just basically forget it. That's what you're ending up with.
And I mean, especially the way some of these deed restrictions are written, they're open to any kind of interpretation you ever want. And if you want to file a lawsuit, hey, you're happily welcome, because every door is open. I mean, imagine the one with George Andres in Jupiter.
Yes.
His deed restrictions say no lawn ornaments without approval of the Architectural Review Committee. Would you suspect that they consider a flagpole a lawn ornament?
Well, look in the case of the Altons down here. Initially, and he's an attorney, and he read every word of the governing documents. Nowhere in the governing documents do the words flag or flagpole appear. Yet, what they did initially was they called it a visual nuisance, and then they called it a structure, an unapproved structure.
Right.
And so this is what I mean about these open and, you know, these very vague provisions in the governing documents, because the attorneys will throw anything and everything they want to through it, and the judges will go along with it. I mean, they don't seem to adhere to the old adage that you protect property rights first and foremost.
Well, it is my opinion that if we have to have homeowners associations, which I can argue about, and I don't think you don't necessarily need them, because quite a few counties have good ordinances and they're willing to enforce them for free without hiring expensive law firms. But then I think if we have homeowners associations, the deed restrictions should be written for homeowners, by homeowners, in the favor of homeowners, and not by attorneys for attorneys to favor their bank accounts.
It should be property rights for the homeowners.
Yes, because, see, in my opinion, as long as I pay my mortgages and I pay for my house, I am the one who should have the say what to do with my home. I mean, so far we pay for our homes and then we have no say over it.
That's right.
And I think that is possibly good enough for a banana republic, but not good enough for the United States of America.
Oh, I don't think there's any self-respecting banana republic out there that would accept that either, Jan. But
yeah, but there you would expect some actions like this. That's
yeah.
Why you call them banana republic.
Yeah, but you don't get them over there. You get them here.
Right, and more than you want.
Something like that. You know, I think we're going to take a break. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. So don't go away. You're on the Commons. We're talking to Jan Bergman from Florida, and we'll be back with a whole lot more.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, I'm Sue Bartholomew, you're on the Commons. And joining us on the Commons today is an old friend from Florida, Jan Bergman. Jan has done some pretty magical things in Florida, and we're going to get back to talking to him about that. But before we do, I have an announcement that I'd like to make. As you know, most diseases are curable. A lot of cancers nowadays are curable if they're caught in time. There's one cancer that is very hard to catch in time because there are no signs and symptoms. And by the time you realize it, it's too far. The disease has progressed a little too far, and it's too late to do anything about it. A friend of mine recently lost her daughter 1 month before her 44th birthday to ovarian cancer. Ovarian cancer is known as the whispering disease because, as I mentioned, there are no signs and symptoms until it is way too late. In her honor, I guess, and I guess this is an annual thing, but in an effort to raise awareness of this disease and to share information and raise funds to kill this silent killer, there will be a walk, a 5-kilometer walk. It is scheduled right now for June 12th at the Reston Town Center in Reston, Virginia. Registration's at 8:30 a.m. The run walk begins at 10 a.m. Entry fee is $25 for ages 13 and over. Kids 12 and under are free. So mark your calendars and join us on June 12th. I will be there, and I hope to see you all there. But please come to Reston Town Center on the 12th. I think you can get a little more information if you go to www.ovarian.org. Go to the State Division and go to Virginia for more information. But plan on joining us. We'd love to see you there. This is a disease that could affect someone you love. If there's a woman, a special woman in your life, you need to do this for them. Thank you. Jan, thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Jan is president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, a Florida grassroots organization. And they've just put in a whole lot of time and a lot of travel going around the country talking to people and listening to testimony from homeowners who are having problems in their associations. Right, Jan?
Yes, we sure did. And we heard a lot, and possibly we heard a lot more than we actually wanted to hear, because it turned out that the problem is even worse than anticipated, and we anticipated already bad enough. But it was definitely a very good education. We learned a lot because you heard the stories, and some of these stories were just plainly unbelievable. And this can be used to work on better legislation and more reforms, which are definitely necessary for the welfare of the citizens who are kind of forced into these kind of associations and sometimes have a real hard time making a nice living. There was a time when we considered our home as our castle. These times are gone if you live in an association, and you have to watch that your wallet is not attacked, and it's always under the pretense, and it's for the welfare of the community. Well, most often the community doesn't have any benefits, but certain people do, and they are very, very eager to defend their profits and are not willing to work any different way.
What was one of the most heinous abuses you heard? Was there one thing that stuck out more than anything else?
Well, I think the worst abuse is actually the foreclosure. Because I think the punishment doesn't fit the crime, and losing your home for non-payment of $50, $60 or $100 is, in my opinion, plainly ridiculous.
I remember reading an article in one of the Florida papers, and they were talking about the hearings. One woman, a 77-year-old woman, testified that her house was foreclosed on to collect 4 pennies.
And one was foreclosed on for $3.50 because he only paid the $60 and not the $3.50 for late fees, which she forgot. She was 69, so... Well, in my opinion, an age where you might once in a while forget 350. And it's not right that they lose their homes over it. That's their life savings, that's their home. They worked for all their lives, and suddenly somebody takes it over, and the deputy comes and says, you have 24 hours to leave.
And you, did you hear a lot of testimony from a lot of people who lost their homes?
Yes, we had heard quite a few real bad stories. And, I mean, you know, the worst of them was the one in Nature Watch, where the people were threatened with foreclosures, paid $28,000 each to avoid the foreclosures, and then suddenly the appeals court said, oh, circuit court judge made a mistake, but the money is all gone. Now they're out of the money. They still live in houses which are under par, and nothing is solved. Everybody else made the money, but the homeowners are stuck with their homes full of problems.
Is this something that should be put in the disclosures?
Actually, disclosure wouldn't help, because how do you want to disclose that there is water damage in 3 years? Nobody knows. And, you know, if I would disclose to you as a seller there is lots of water damage in the house, I don't think you would buy it, right?
No, but I'm not talking about the water, disclosing the damage. I'm talking about the fact that this is something that can happen. And if you still, it's like a bit like playing Russian roulette. Chances are it won't happen, but there's only one bullet in six chambers. So if you spin the chamber of the gun and you fire, you've got a 1 in 6 chance of, or 5 in 6 chances of not getting killed, but you've got 1 chance in six of something happening, and it's a bit like that.
Yes, but see, disclosure alone wouldn't protect the people. I seriously feel that, you know, since the government created this, these associations and everything what comes with it, they're as well responsible of protecting the people against abuses. And, you know, we had the discussion about an enforcement agency quite a lot of times, and we need something like that, and people need to be protected against fraudulent developers, against fraudulent sellers, against fraudulent real estate agents, and, in my opinion as well, against fraudulent attorneys. Because I think it's kind of funny when you read that the federal courts find attorneys, which are well-known homeowners association attorneys, that they're violating the FDCPA, meaning federal law. That means, in my opinion, an attorney who is supposed to be the officer of the court is violating the laws. I mean, what does it tell you about our society?
Well, I'm not going to go into that, but there's something else that's going on right here in Virginia that's got me pretty sick in terms of the attorneys. But that's for another show. But you said the government should protect you. In essence, in the Nature Watch case, it was one arm of the government that caused a lot of the problems for the individual homeowners. It was the courts, the judge, right?
One, not so much the government. It was, in a way, the government, because, see, if you consider the building department, the government, yes, because they signed off on these houses.
I'm talking about the, well, yeah, I mean, there's that also. We don't, we don't build them like we used to, but I'm talking about the judge. It was a mistake. It was an error on the judge's part that caused the special assessments to happen on the homeowners in Nature Watch, right?
Well, yes, he didn't know the difference between a condominium and a homeowners association.
Yeah. Okay.
And he made the mistake, an obvious mistake.
Yes.
And he wasn't even willing to listen to arguments. He even appointed a receiver and more or less cost these homeowners millions of dollars. And after the appeals court said, oh, he was wrong, everybody dropped everything, and the homeowners are sitting there, yeah, with the shambles of their homes.
How many lost their homes because of that?
Lost their homes, I think only three so far, but most of them are in very, very serious financial troubles. They just filed, by the way, a lawsuit this week against the building department of their county for signing off on these houses.
Oh, really?
Yes. And, people used their life savings to pay these $28,000. In two cases, I know they used their kids' college funds to pay this $28,000. So more or less what it means, in one case, the family can't send their kids to college because they had to pay for it.
Very quickly, Jan, in about 10 words, can you summarize what happened at Nature Watch?
What happened was they found water damage in many houses. Some of the owners filed suit against the association. The circuit court judge quickly decided the association is responsible for all the damages, meaning all homeowners had to put into a kitty to pay for the damages. Then there was a receiver appointed. He more or less tore the whole community apart. And then the appeals court came and said, no, decision was wrong, stop it all, and that's it. And that's where it stands, and the people are out of the money, and nobody is there to help or to protect them.
Yet some of the homeowners there who did have problems did collect from their own insurance companies.
Yes, but they didn't share.
They didn't. Then they kept the money. It was like this big windfall because the judge said the whole community had to pay for it.
Right. But see, in the moment when the judge decided that, the other insurance companies stopped payment.
Yeah.
Because they said, it's not the homeowner's fault, it's the association's fault. So the association has to pay for it. So our homeowner's policy doesn't cover that. So we're out of here.
Oh, so now they're stuck with... Now those homeowners are stuck with having to pay for it, huh?
Right.
In addition to paying for the screw-up on the judge's part.
Yes.
Oh, boy. What a mess.
Oh, boy, yes.
What a mess.
Now you know why people say association life can be so nice.
And the homeowners agreed. This is what they wanted.
I don't think so. I'm sorry, but this story is really sad enough. But sometimes you really have to laugh. Because if you see what can happen in our society, it's something I would have never believed. If you would have told me this 5 years ago, I would have possibly looked at you like a deer in the headlights. And
this can't be happening,
are you,
right?
Are you serious or are you kidding me?
Yeah, this can't be happening. Well, a lot of states have been trying to get some fix at the legislative in the legislative arena. But, of course, as you pointed out, the special interests have come along and whined. And, I called it the Chicken Little dance, They sort of jump up and down and yell and squawk and scream and the sky's falling. Oh, my God, if you do this, associations will be a thing of, thing of history. And we can't have this. And that was my term for them, was that they were the little chicken dance. But... Jan, I got an email, which I did forward to you, and it was from someone named Val, who says, "My name is Val, and I'm a member of CCFJ. I have a proposal I was going to make at our membership strategy meeting in Lake Worth on May 26th. Since my proposal involves both you and Jan, I'll make it now. We have a very serious national effort to banish... Oh, we need a very serious... national effort to ban non-judicial foreclosure with a focal point in the D.C. area. And you are that perfect focal point. I've been called a lot of things, but never a focal point before. To stop this silent national epidemic and this rape of the American dream. Lawmakers have to be convinced that using a bulldozer to bury an ant is overkill and must stop. To do this, you need to bring together all the junkyard dogs like Jan, who, once they bite, don't let go. Ask the Florida legislature. These dedicated and knowledgeable individuals from Florida, California, Texas, Arizona, Illinois, Virginia, etc., need to come together to make it happen. An annual conference in D.C. would be an excellent way to bring and keep the focus on the problem. And that's it.
And I think the idea is in general very good, and that might be very helpful, because our main government still sits in Washington. But there's one thing we have to look at, that all the states have separate laws and statutes.
Mm-hmm.
And most association laws are actually state laws. So even if we have a national committee dealing with this issue, we still have to go after the state legislators as well. So we can't just rely on one part by going to Washington. We have as well to continue working on the local legislators.
Well, I completely agree with you, because the power does come from state legislators. I think that there needs to be a national awareness of what's going on. And, you know, maybe a foreclosure hall of fame, you know, Winona Blevins, some of the stories you were telling me about, maybe a list of these people who lost their homes and the reasons they lost their homes and the amounts they lost their homes for. Because the ones you're talking about here were not, you know, $3.50, 4 cents. I can't even begin to fathom foreclosing to collect 4 cents. I mean, what kind of people are these? But, you know, these are not what the industry will say. The Chicken Little dance will go, oh my God, you know, if you don't foreclose, then nobody will pay their assessments, and it's not fair to those who pay, and the whole, you know, the whole association concept will fall apart. But that's not necessarily true, is it, Jan?
It is absolutely false. Please don't forget, we have here in Florida some older associations which still don't have the power to lien and foreclose.
Are you talking about civic associations, not mandatory membership?
Well, we have as well mandatory homeowners associations which are not allowed to lien or foreclose because it's not in their deed restriction.
Okay.
I haven't seen one of them going broke. They live happily ever after. And very often, they have a much, much better feeling and sense of community than these new ones do, where everybody gets threatened with liens and foreclosures, and if you don't cut your bushes, we fine you and foreclose on your home, and if you dare to speak up at the next board meeting, you will see the next thing you find in your mailbox is a violation letter. And see, that is a system which more or less works with scaring people. And our society is not built on scaring people.
Well,
supposedly we are a democracy, last thing I heard.
Yeah, that's when you... The democracy... We've been told that democracy exists one day a year, and that's at the annual meeting. You elect your board members, and then you leave them alone for a full year. And if you don't like what they've done, then next year, democracy, on the day of the annual meeting, democracy reigns supreme again, and you have a chance to vote the bums out. But, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you end up with more proxies or votes than you have members. So. Vote early, vote often, huh?
Yes, and even at these annual meetings, you don't have democracies. You should hear about some of these meetings. The board bring their attorney. They have a list of people you can elect. This list is made up by the board members. They're only their buddies on the list. The attorney will tell the membership, excuse me, too many members, they all can't talk, so you better don't talk at all. This is the election, take it or leave it, and if you don't like it, go home. These are annual meetings which have taken place.
And then you stuff the ballot box, right?
Right, and nobody is allowed to control it. They read the result of this election, mostly made up already before the election took place, and here we go. And if you dare to ask for documentation, you are being told that's a secret ballot, you can't hear it, you can't see it, this is the result, take it or leave it. Democracy
at work, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know this happens all the time, Jan.
Well, you see, don't forget, some of the service providers, like the attorneys, like some management companies, and don't get me wrong, they're as well very good ones. You know, not all are bad. But there are some who will do everything to keep their job, who will keep the existing board members in power under all circumstances. They will do everything to keep them in power so that anybody who dares to challenge them for the position on the board has lost already before he even dares to speak up.
I get invited sometimes to board meetings, not my homeowners meetings, but other board meetings as well. And I also attend all of my own board meetings. And it's interesting because you can walk in and you can sit down and you can see who the management or the attorney, because in some associations the attorney is always present at all of the meetings, who the dumb homeowners are, the board members who have not been able to figure out what's happening, but who do exactly as they're told by the manager and by the attorney, because, you know, they'll sit there and they'll argue. The attorney says something, the manager says something. It's up to the homeowners to make that decision. And the homeowners have a right to question it, because ultimately they're going to be responsible for it. And yet you have these hand-picked board members who've been on the board for years and years and years, who sit there and say, oh, don't micromanage, and they're the experts, and they're the ones who, you know, they're the ones who know what they're talking about. It's just sickening. And you see it all the time. You don't have to know who's who. You don't ever have to have seen them. You just have to sit in on a meeting, and you can tell.
Well, I can give you a real good example. The condo bill here in Florida this year had a provision regarding term limits for board members.
Okay.
And we had on our website a provision to contact the legislators.
Okay.
Now, the other side, meaning the opposing party, used our website to send these messages to the legislators, but their messages opposing the bill. What they didn't realize is that we got a copy of each of these letters and their email address and so on. And funny enough, all the people who opposed, and you can look it up here in Florida on the Division of Corporation, were board members who are in charge since 12, 15, 16, 18 years.
Yeah.
It is amazing. But then they use, you know, you have the same chance as you do with politicians. You can kick them out if you don't like them.
Yeah.
What? Funny enough, politicians have term limits.
Yeah.
So why is it wrong to have term limits for board members?
Because that's what the homeowners want, right, Jan?
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah.
No. They're all enthused that they get everything they want all the time.
Oh, yeah. That's why the homeowners are such a happy bunch, huh?
Yes. And that's why they all signed on the dotted line, and were so happy to sign. They didn't even have to hold their hands.
That's what the homeowners wanted, and so there we go.
Yes.
Don't mess with what they want. So what's on the agenda for next year, Jan?
Well, on the agenda for next year is we will have a meeting in 2 weeks in Palm Beach. We will talk about it. We're already talking about it by email, and So far, we look for three main issues. Next year, the condo owners definitely need more protection against abusers. We made a start, but there is still a lot to be desired. The homeowners here in Florida finally need regulation and enforcement of the existing laws, meaning we need a regulatory agency, and hopefully we get one which will work and enforce the laws as required. And for our friends in the community development districts, we need disclosure. And that will be our three main targets for next year.
Well, good luck with that. And I know you'll be back with us at some point. And we will follow your progress. You've done an admirable job in Florida. And I think, and one thing I meant to point out was that you have formed alliances with a lot of other organizations. So you've got strength in number. And I think that's very, very important.
Yes, and we're working further on it. And it looks good. More and more people realize that they have to do something about it. And if they're just there not to get involved, they made the wrong decision, because they got involved when they used their life savings to buy a home, and then just ignoring what happens with their money is definitely the wrong approach. More and more people realize it, and the media in recent times is helping us very much getting the message around.
Well, thank you. So if you live in an association, you need to get involved. There's no such thing as carefree living. Thanks for hanging out with us today on The Commons. Please join us on The Commons every Saturday, same time, same place. On The Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See y'all next week.